Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 108 with Garrett Cathcart at Team Red, White, and Blue.
To find meaning in what you do, that could be in anything, right? That could be in what you do for a living to earn your paycheck. That could be, you know, maybe what you do with this podcast. I mean, you're helping people just by telling stories and connections. That could be volunteering somewhere. But, you know, for me, I for so long in the Army, that was my identity, right? That's who I was. And once I was out of that, like, I didn't know who I was anymore, right? To do what you love, to do what you believe in as a living, I think is a great gift.
Well, as you'll learn today, Team Red, White, and Blue is a great resource for veterans and civilians. They are an organization that enriches the lives of America's veterans by connecting them to their communities through physical and social activities. I think no matter where you're at in your career, you'll be fired up by this organization. I'm betting you're going to be curious about how you can get involved. I know I am. You can find more information at beyondtheuniform.io, where you'll find show notes to every resource that we discuss, as well as an offer from audible.com offering a free audiobook to members of Beyond the Uniform at beyondtheuniform.io/books. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Garrett Cathcart. Well, joining me today in Atlanta, Georgia, in Team RWB's co-op space is Garrett Cathcart. Garrett, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So for listeners, wanted to give you a quick rundown on Garrett. He is the Southwest Regional Director at Team Red, White, and Blue, which is an organization that enriches the lives of America's veterans by connecting them to their communities through physical and social activities. He is also the Chief Community Engagement Officer at Vetlanta. He started out at West Point, after which he served in the Army for 8.5 years, with 2 years in Baghdad as a recon scout platoon leader, and then as an aide-de-camp to commanding general. After his transition from the Army, he worked at NuVasiv as an associate spine representative before joining Team RWB. So Garrett, just to start off, anything to add to or amend to that intro?
Yeah, it was close. I've been in a lot of places. I'm on my third career already. But I was a scout recon platoon leader in Baghdad during the surge, and then a military advisor in Baghdad for a second year. And then I was a cavalry troop commander in Afghanistan, and I tried to get out of the Army for the third time, and then maybe the aide-de-camp to the commanding general of Fort Carson and 4th Infantry Division. And then the spine rep, and now my current role in RWB.
That's awesome. Well, for listeners, the way that I thought I would go through the interview is we're going to talk a little bit about Team RWB, just because I think it's something applicable to any veteran and something that we can all learn from. And then we're going to go through Garrett's personal story and how he ended up there, just to give you a sense of a potential career option and what this sort of career might look like and the path to get there. So Garrett, let's start off with what would you want listeners to know about Team Red, White, and Blue?
Sure. And you've said the mission statement, right? We enrich the lives of veterans by connecting them to their community through physical and social activity, which is a nice sentence, but in reality, it's a lot more kind of complex. So just for me, I'm the Southeast director. We've got 43 cities that we're in, and we're in nationally about 213 now. And in any one of those given cities, any given night of the week, there's local consistent events, and they're inclusive. Anyone can participate, veteran or civilian, but that could be something like yoga or CrossFit or a ruck or a hike, a run. I mean, it's really up to that local chapter leadership team what the activities they do. Even things like meeting in a pub for pub trivia or bowling. And the idea really is, and you know, it's one reason I'm here now, we'll get to that later, is that when most folks get out of the military, one of the things they miss most is just being around other good people, right? You know, I say people that get it. You know, you don't think about community or camaraderie while you're in, and maybe you're excited to get out and get the big job. But we do the work to build authentic and genuine relationships. And that's kind of, you know, wherever you're at in life, maybe you're kind of down a little bit and need that community to get you through a dark place, or maybe you're successful and you just miss being around folks who kind of understand some of the experiences you've had. And then that kind of leads into a lot of other things, our leadership development program and community service projects. But it's really kind of the springboard. It's just connecting folks to each other and building relationships.
I love that. I mean, I think one of the most common things I hear on the show is that when people make that transition to civilian, they lose that safety net and that community that they took for granted. And I recognize, when I got out of the military, I never even knew that was one of those things that I enjoyed, was everywhere I went, I had a built-in support group, built-in friend group, built-in activities. And once you get out, you don't really have that. So I love that Team Red, White, and Blue is filling that gap and creating those social connections that I think make life more enjoyable and make people more productive and make them just feel more plugged in and ready to go.
No, I mean, I was the same way. I mean, you take it for granted while you're serving, and you can't kind of wait to get out and get to the next phase of your life. But once we build those relationships, it turns a lot of other things. One of our mindsets is that veterans are not these broken kind of charity cases that are all that need sympathy and help, and certainly some folks need services. But veterans are leaders, right? You've had some incredible experiences. You've been to some incredible places. You worked in a team. You've been a problem solver. So, instead of feeling sorry for yourself, get out and lead again, right? And that could mean coaching a softball team, being a leader in your family, at your workplace. I mean, it's up to you where to lead. But the idea being, when veterans go back to their communities, wherever that may be, and lead, the community is better, right? And that's not political. That's just leadership is leadership. And then when the communities are better, then the country's better. And that's kind of what we're trying to do in the big picture.
And you mentioned the leadership development program, and you also just mentioned before we started recording about having been in Chicago doing some stuff for that. What would you want listeners to know about Team Red, White, and Blue's leadership development program?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think we've got one of the best in the business leadership development directors, a guy named Joe Quinn, and we're working on, we're building our own content, right? It's not off the shelf. It's some things in the military, but some things that are in the civilian world, and we've got some great partners who lend us their time and their brain, which is folks like Brené Brown and Simon Sinek. So there's no place else to get it. And this organization, it's got 125,000 members, and it's ran all by volunteers. Right. And so, obviously you don't get paid in money to do that, but you believe in it. And the way I can, we can reward you is by, developing you as a leader with some of this content and sending you to some of our experiences, our camps and our academies to give you the tools to, we hope to go back and make RWB better, but we also want you to go back into your community and make it better too. And we started this and we didn't know what we had, and it was growing in honestly faster than we could keep up with, and we didn't know what the secret sauce was, and we've done some had some smart guys that some big consulting firms help us figure it out. But in the end, people miss purpose, and they miss leadership, and they miss being part of a team and a community, right? So when you sign up and you get that awesome red shirt you might have seen that Nike is so kind of donate to us, and you see someone in a race and you say, hey, what is that thing you're wearing? What is RWB? I see like four or five of you guys out here, or 20 or 20 of you, and you wait for each other, and you help each other finish the race, or you're out doing a Habitat for Humanity build, and that kind of just feeds on itself, and it's been growing and growing, and it's still on that same path.
That's awesome. And Brené Brown is incredible. My wife and I are literally just listening to an audiobook by her called Rising Strong. And Simon Sinek, I've read his books as well. I think that they're both incredible leaders in the civilian space. And I think that's awesome. So if someone's listening, let's say that they're on active duty, or let's say they got out a couple years ago and they wanted to take advantage of this incredible content, is that on your website or is that in an event or how do they take part in that?
Sure. So to be transparent, we're kind of building the airplane while we're flying it, right? So we're creating a lot of the content now. Some of it's done. And we'll launch the website hopefully here in the next few months, but it's called eagleleader.org. And so if you just sign up for Team RWB and you get your name at teamrwb.org, that gives you access to some of the online stuff that we've created. And as you progress it, and then called the Eagle Leader Journey, that we take you through, you'll progress in some of the leadership positions. Then we'll start flying you places to get some of this like taught in person. And then some of the end of that road is, we call it seminars. We'll fly, and Brené Brown has donated some of her time, and we'll send you to one of her seminars, right? And so it's a journey that we're building. So, the first half is kind of finished, which is will be open to, I don't want to speak for Joe Quinn. He wants to share it with the world, right? It's not just going to be you have to be a member of RWB. Like, this is open source knowledge and leadership. If come learn from us and make your community better, right? We're a nonprofit. No one's making money. We just want to serve veterans and enrich their lives, and make communities better. So, step one, if you want to get it now, is to sign up and go lead in your community. And then, your local leadership will get you integrated and get you the tools you need.
And I know origin stories are all the rage right now with these comic book movies. What's the origin story for Team RWB?
Sure. So our founder is a guy named Mike Irwin, who at the time was an active duty major in the Army back in 2012. And, you know, he just saw a need. He wanted to help folks, particularly wounded veterans, right? The guys that, you know, amputees or were coming back hurt. And the way it was set up was there's athletes and there's advocates, right? So the folks that are wounded, you're an athlete. And you're a mentor, you're an advocate if you sign up and want to help one of these folks out. And so, you know, he ran the Twin Cities Marathon and got a bunch of his friends to run raise some money, started the nonprofit. And as we progressed, you know, we noticed something, right? And it was that everyone was signing up to be a mentor and an advocate. And even the folks that were hurt, that were wounded, very few folks were signing up to be an athlete, right? Everyone wanted to serve and to give back and to mentor someone else. So we kind of had to stop for a minute and say, hey, there's something to this. Maybe our model's a little bit off. And so, you know, the leadership at the time, the board of directors said, hey, what if we had this model that was, you know, this was a controversial kind of move at the time, but it was, what if civilians could be part of this too, right? And then, you know, we're going to help close the civ-mil divide, and we're gonna build these incredible teams in these cities, and no one is kind of the helper and the one that needs help, right? Everyone's on the same page. And it just kind of grew from there. And, you know, they call it the Eagle Fire. But, you know, if you've ever been to a major, you know, race, the Marine Corps Marathon or Army 10 Miler, there's just a sea of red shirts with the eagle on it. And it's just, it's some of them like to run with a flag. It's just, it's incredible to see, right? It's even more incredible to be a part of. So once it started growing and folks were like, how come it's not in my city? You know, I'll say, well, it can be, but you got to volunteer to be the chapter captain, right? And then so you kind of challenge folks to lead it and to do it in their city and give them their resources. And, you know, it comes with a budget that they administer in their city. And then from there, it's just grown and grown and taken off.
And I imagine in your work with Team Red, White, and Blue, you've interacted with so many different veterans and you've seen so many different transitions. I'm just thinking of those listening right now who are maybe on active duty, thinking about that transition to civilian life. Anything that you've learned in your work so far that you'd want them to know about that upcoming transition?
Sure. And some of this, you know, from my personal experience, you know, have a plan, right? And when you're getting out, you can't wait to get out and not go to PT and not wear a uniform and not shave and have pure freedom. But, you know, you will miss it, right? I mean, you forget the, you know, I was in the Army, you forget the sensitive item layouts and the field time and all the nuff and stuff, but you tend to remember the great things, right? The guys you're and the girls you're with and the common sense of purpose and, you know, the fun stuff you did. But it's important to have a network when you leave. And that could be anything, right? It could be family. It could be, you know, RWB, the mission continues, Team Rubicon, or all three. But you're gonna need folks who've understood where you've been and what you've done. And that's any service, deployed, not deployed. It just helps you kind of find your legs underneath you when you get out into the civilian world. And that's gonna, you know, enrich your life if you're in a good spot and hopefully prevent you from going to a bad spot, right? A lot of folks get out and it's hard to kind of find your place in the world once you've been a part of some great, great teams and historic things. And I also say, you know, it's a great world out there. There's a lot of ways to serve. You know, a lot of our members either had family members that served or they always wanted to and life happened. They never got the chance. And I tell them, you know, wearing the uniform was one of the greatest honors of my life, but there's many ways to serve, right? And this maybe isn't as sexy as jumping out of the back of a helicopter, but it's just as important in a lot of ways as well.
And I second that. I think that one of the themes I've seen in these interviews is everyone does miss that camaraderie. Everyone misses that sense of purpose. And I love that Team Red, White, and Blue is providing both of those things. You're giving that sense of connection that I think is so important, but you're also giving that ability to serve, to lead, to make the community better. And I think that's just two of the most vital things I've heard consistently in all of these interviews. I want to switch gears and talk about your role and kind of your journey getting here. But before I do, anything else you'd want to talk about with Team Red, White, and Blue that we haven't covered so far?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks, you know, how do I get involved or what's it cost? And it costs you literally nothing to no one, right? It's we just want your time and your engagement. We've got some very great partners in the corporate and veterans philanthropic space that make sure if you sign up, you get the shirt, and all you got to do is show up, right? And that's just it's a very low barrier to entry. And the activities range, I mean, from anything and everything, right? It's just getting folks together. So it's easy. Just go to teamrwb.org, click join the team, give them your name and email, and then you're on. You'll be located or contacted by your local chapter captain, and I'll give them the calendar of events, and there you are.
That's awesome. I think that's great. It's you know, it's funny too. My wife and I moved to Denver maybe 9-10 months ago from San Francisco,
yeah.
and it's one of those things where like we haven't had to ask ourselves this question like 8 years, but it's like, how do you meet people when you move to a new area? And so I'll check that out today. I think that's just a great resource, whether you transitioned, you know, a month ago or 10 years ago. It's just a great sense of community.
They just had a big ski trip out there. So there's folks out in Denver.
Nice. Well, let's start off with a little bit about, I want to hear your story getting here, but let's start off with how would you describe what you do at Team Red, White, and Blue if you were talking to someone right now on active duty?
Yeah, it's a lot. So I guess the best way is almost on active duty. I would say I'm in command right now, right? So like kind of everything that happens in the region, good or bad, is on me, right? But obviously there's a lot of folks that actually make it happen. So that's administering the budget, overseeing the two programs that we run, which is the chapter program, the leadership development program, doing some outward facing engagements with some of our partners, which are donors. You know, do a lot of speaking on panels for veteran type stuff, engage with the VA, you're right, because they, you know, the VA is good at some stuff, they're not good at other stuff. So the VA sends a lot of folks to us because, you know, we're consistent. You always know on this street corner at this time, or, you know, on this trail at this time, you'll find other people who kind of understand you. So some of it's relationship building, a little bit of budgeting, but it's a little bit of everything, right? I like to tell people we're kind of a startup, right? I mean, we're a 5-year-old startup that's 120,000 members and 30 employees. So everybody here does a little bit of everything. I've got a great program manager named Patrick who kind of, he runs the nuts and bolts, right? He's kind of the XO. And we collaborate on lots of things, but the volunteer leaders, they really run everything, right? And these are folks who donate their time, their talent, their passion. So making sure they're engaged, and I can't pay them, but I can recognize them and I can give them gratitude and I can give them development. And so a lot of time I'm on the road seeing our volunteers as well, seeing how they're doing and seeing how I can help.
That's incredible. And let's rewind things because I want to hear more about how you get here. When you were back in the Army, you talked about a couple attempts to get out. How did you make that decision to leave the Army, and what was that transition like?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're long for it, the podcast. It's, you know, so I went to West Point, 5 years, and I always thought I'd be a five and out guy. You know, my sophomore year was 9/11, so we knew the world was going to change. And actually, my roommate and I actually considered like quit, you know, resigning from West Point enlisting, so we thought we're going to miss the war, which is still not, obviously was not true. I went to Iraq during the surge in 06, and it was a rough year. The insurgency was kind of at its height. Tough year. I lost my commander. As an event, lost four of my guys with a large IED and small arms contact. And then at the end of that tour, one of my best friends from West Point was killed in action. It takes its toll, but it's kind of just at the height of the war is you come home for a year, which is nonstop training. Then I went directly back to Baghdad this time. I was supposed to be an assistant S3, which is an operations officer, assistant operations officer. You build slides, write op orders. You're kind of an office guy, but my squadron commander told me, Gary, you're not the best with slides. The Iraqis seem to like you and you like being out there. So I need you to take the job and go advise this infantry battalion, which to me was winning the lottery. I got to go back out and operate. So at the end of that, my squadron commander lived in this gigantic, like, Iraqi house. I said, sir, I'm getting out. I'm going to go work for the State Department. I'm going to be a diplomat and, you know, serve the country, but do it in an embassy and all that kind of stuff. Because I was just tired because, my 20s had all been deployed or training to deploy, and the first year was pretty tough. And so I turned in they call it a refrat, my resignation paperwork. And about 3 months later, he calls me into his office. I'm like, sir, what's up? And he's like, hey, you know that resignation packet you turned in? I was like, yes, sir. He's like, I threw it away, which is definitely not legal. And so I was like, sir, I don't think you can do that. He's like, yeah, I know, but sit down. And so he sat me down. He said, look, you've got a knack for this. You clearly love it. So I'm going to give you a little mentorship. You know, and then he talked me through. He's like, hey, I'll give you command of Alpha Troop, which was the troop I was in when I lost my guys and my commander. So he knew I was tied to it pretty close. I was like, ah, sir, that's awesome, but I don't know. And then he said, like, look, you'll take command at Fort Hood, Texas, which is, you know, not the best post in the Army. And you're going to move into Fort Carson, Colorado, which is the Colorado Springs, which is one of the nicer posts in the Army. I was like, sure, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know. And then he said, like, this is at the time. He's like, this is kind of TS, you know, top secret information, but you're going to command in Afghanistan. You'll be the first mechanized cavalry troop to command in the Afghan theater. I was like, ah, man. So I couldn't say no to that. So I stayed in. I took a troop to Afghanistan. Which was an amazing, I mean, beyond words, incredible experience, right? You're a battle space owner, you're fighting Taliban, you're building coalitions of Afghan tribes, you're working on development with USAID and the Agriculture Department and State Department, you're doing, you know, governance with all those folks. And then they gave me a second command, so I stayed in again. And big year, a lot of fights. So after all that, I was like, I'm exhausted. I've been fighting all my 20s. At that point, I was probably 30 years old. Like, I left, find a girlfriend and slash wife at some point. And so I turned in my paperwork, getting ready to turn in. And every brigade owed one captain to go up and to interview to be the aide de camp to the new commanding general of Fort Carson, a 2-star. And so they said, Garrett, you're going up. I was like, I don't want this job. I don't know what an aide does. In my mind at the time, it was like you polish shoes and carry bags and, you know, or kind of like a little servant man. I said, you're going up. I was like, all right, but I'm going to tell them I don't want it. I'm going to tank it on purpose, just so you know that, guys. They're like, hey, whatever, you're the guy. So I was like, fine. So at the time, I lived in downtown Colorado Springs, and for whatever reason, I couldn't find a clean uniform top. So the only one I found was a small uniform top. And I don't wear small, but I was like, whatever, I'm not trying to impress anybody. So I put it on, and I went to the interview, and it was like a wetsuit top. Like, it was skin tight. And the interview was on a video teleconference that the general was still depending on. And I sit down and he says, do you work out? I'm like, well, thanks, sir. But it's really just a super tight top. We started talking about life and we'd both gone to West Point. We were both on the marathon team. And he asked me some few questions. And then he said, sir, Gary, you want the job? I'm like, no, sir, I'm getting out. The next weekend, I was in Las Vegas at a wedding. And he calls me and said, get to work on Monday. You're my aide de camp. I was like, oh, man, I don't want to do that. But long story short, I ended up doing it. And I don't think I've learned more about leadership in 1 year than – I'll never learn more than that 1 year with him, right? His name's Joe Anderson. He's still in. He's a 3-star. Like, such an amazing leader that I still use lessons from him every day, right? Great mentor, a very rewarding year in my life. But after all that, even he's like, Gary, you should go be an Army congressional liaison, go get this fellowship. Like, sure, it's time to get out, right? And so if at the 9-year mark, you got to say I'm all in, right? Because 20 years is a golden pension. I said, look, I want to get out. I want to see what the rest of the world is like. These experiences are great. And so I got out and met a lady, went to California. And I thought, well, now it's time to at least make some money. So I put my name in the hat to be a med device rep in spine hardware, which could be an extremely lucrative job, and got it. Then found myself working in Beverly Hills, California, which is quite the transition.
What was the what was that first job search like? Like, how did you know medical devices, or how did you even find NuVasive?
Well, let me be honest. I didn't know. I didn't care what it was, as long as I was like making money. I was like, look, I'm done. Maybe I'll go back to service at some point. But I contacted one of those junior military officer recruiting firms, and the first two hung up on me because I was already out. Like, I gotten out and took a few months off just to bum around. And then I call a third one and he's like, hey dude, you're like a med device guy. Like, you got a great military experience and all this kind of stuff. I was like, what the heck is med device? He's like, you make lots of money. I was like, sweet, I'll do it. Even though I don't want medicine, I did nothing about sales, nothing about medicine or spine surgery. And so this company called Medtronic flew me to Memphis, Tennessee, bought my little brand new Banana Republic suit to go to my interview. And I'm in Memphis, right? So I went out and explored and ate barbecue and listened to blues, probably a little too late, maybe 2 or 3 in the morning. I come back, shower, and I thought of a few, you know, combat scenarios I could use for, you know, the behavioral questions, leadership and problem solving and all this kind of stuff. And I go downstairs to the lobby, and there's always, like, you know, these guys got out and girls got out as, like, lieutenants and junior captains. And They all these black leather kind of like portfolio folders. And so I was like, guys, why do you all have these folders? What's in them? And they're like, oh, we have all of our resumes in here. I was like, oh, crap, just bring resumes to this thing, which I had no clue about, right? Because I'd never interviewed for a job. And they're like, we're like snickering at me. I'm like, don't worry about me, dudes. I'll be fine. So I stopped some guy in the hallway. I was like, hey, if I send you an email, could you perhaps print out 10 copies of something for me? And he's like, for what? I was like, my resume. He's like, oh, my gosh, you didn't bring your resume? I'm like, all right, I know you're a big company. Just hook it up. And so he did. And the interviews, they were five separate one-hour interviews across the company, all divisions. But the first one I went into was the guy I stopped in the hallway to print out my resumes. And he looked at me. He's like, do you have any copies of your resumes, Garrett? And I was like, actually, Wayne, I do. He just looked at me. He's like, I'll give you 0 points for preparation, but I'll give you 100 for innovation. And I was like, do you want innovators here or not, Wayne? And then, you know, went off and answered all the questions. And really, you know, all the questions about leadership and problem solving. I had to, you know, just given all the deployments, a lot of stories. So I got the offer. And then someone else from a different company gave me a counter offer. I was like, I don't know how any of this works. Offers, counter offers, salary negotiation. I was like, sure, this one's in LA. I'll take it. Because my girlfriend at the time lived there. And so I took it. And now I find myself standing in operating rooms in Los Angeles, like with neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons, like doing spine surgery. I'm, you know, the med guy is supposed to like bring the screws and the instruments and know what's going on. And like, I was so out of my element. Like, I was uncomfortable. Like I was more comfortable like downrange than I was in this OR. And it was a comedy of errors.
That's just, I mean, I'm just picturing being the odd man out in this operating room, just this intense situation. Like,
well, I mean, I didn't even know what a case was or a fluoroscope. So like my first week on the job, the rep is like, I'm going to Vegas, cover my case. I'm like, I don't know what that means. So I'll never forget this. It was Glendale Memorial Hospital. Dr. Gravely, who was the chief attending surgeon, like the top surgeon in the hospital, went to Harvard Medical School. And he doesn't know who I am or that I have no clue what I'm doing. He's like, you know, puts up this x-ray on the side. The patient's open. You can see the spine. He's like, Garrett, what do you think? I think if going to L4, the patient might get some dysphagia. Like, I literally knew none of the words coming out of his mouth. I just like was like petrified, sweating. So now you're in this position, like, do I make something up? And he, like, someone gets hurt. Do I just tell them I don't know what I'm doing? And, like, I get trouble. And honestly, this is where, like, the army and integrity and character on play. I was just like, look, and that movie was that Catch Me If You Can popped in my head. It's like, doc, like, you're the doctor. Like, you don't need my opinion. Like, do what you think is right, which is complete BS. But he's like, you're right, Garrett. I mean, it's just like ridiculous stuff like that. But it turned into, I got to see sales and med device, right? You take doctors to dinner. You tell them war stories. They give you your business. It just became very transactional. And like very quickly, I realized this is not, I didn't know what this was. And I don't like it, right? I mean, it just feels weird to me. And I feel no sense of purpose or community or like I'm doing something for the greater good. I very quickly became very unhappy.
And so how was it that you made the transition to Team Red, White, and Blue?
So kind of like at the, I mean, I don't want to say a rock bottom, but like the girl didn't work out. The State Department job didn't work out. Now I'm like, well, crap. Now I'm in LA at this job that I don't like. What's the next move? And I had no idea, no plan. And that's where this guy calls me, just out of the blue. I met him in Afghanistan. He's now our leadership director of leadership development, Joe Quinn. He was in the Army. He got out, went to Harvard, and then he was a civilian advisor to General Petraeus at the time. And I had just through living in the villages and hanging out with tribes, you know, making friends, eating food that, you know, ended up being, you know, there's some dudes on motorcycles that weren't really uniformed forces. They would travel with me, patrol with me, and we'd do actions. And so he came out to like, dude, what is going on? Why are tribes hanging out? And so we met there. We headed off. He's a good Brooklyn kid. And then I saw him once on my 2 week break from Afghanistan. I went to visit my brother in Boston to meet up. And I haven't talked to him in 3 or 4 years. And he's called me out of nowhere. He's like, Garrett, you ever think of working in a nonprofit? It's like, heck no, man. I want to be poor. Like, nonprofit, that sounds like miserable. He's like, all right, do me a favor. Just go to this thing called RWB in LA and check it out. I was like, all right, man. Like, I like you. I'll give it a look. So I went to an event. You know, I was like this cynical veteran who didn't want anything to do with other veterans. Like, I'm fine. I'll be good. I've transitioned. I'm healthy. Then you get there and you actually experience it. you're around other Army dudes, you're making fun of the Navy dudes, like you're working out, like you're like there's like this tension just lifts. Like, dude, this is what I've not even without even realizing, like, this is what I've been missing. It's just like this hanging out with good people, right? Who understands some things that I've been through and things that I've done, and I can understand some things that they've been through and done, and we can talk about it. And after a few workouts, you know, I could say, hey, dude, you ever like see someone, you know, like a counselor for your shit? And they're like, ah, no. I mean, that the workouts really are a mechanism to build a relationship, to move into other things. And so I called Joe back. All right, dude, I can see what you're doing there. I like it. What's the deal? And so, you know, I'm the first ever Southeast Regional Director because we were growing and they're still, you know, the hiring folks. And so I flew to Tampa, Florida, where at the time Executive Director Blaine was living. And it was like a 12-hour interview. It was longer than any, you know, corporate job ever. Like, we had breakfast, we talked, we had lunch, we talked. I went to 12 meetings, we did a workout. Like, I felt like he was judging me on my pull-up ability. But the whole point of that was he wanted to know what kind of human being I was, whether I was passionate about this, whether I cared about it. And, you know, I did. So I got the offer. And that was, you know, 2.5 years ago. And I drove from Los Angeles to Atlanta. And to be honest, I have not been happy. This has been a very good decision.
You know, what you said about nonprofits, I've heard from other people as well, where there's this perception. I mean, the name kind of reinforces this thought, nonprofit. I'm going to scrape by on, you know, cup of noodle for a while.
Yeah.
What would you say to a veteran who's thinking of, you know, what to do and considering a nonprofit?
And that, you know, I had a short stint in the corporate side, and certainly you can find meaning in your profession, but, to find meaning in what you do. That could be in anything, right? That could be in what you do for a living to earn your paycheck. That could be, you know, maybe what you do with this podcast. I mean, you're helping people just by telling stories and connections. That could be volunteering somewhere. But, you know, for me, I for so long in the Army, that was my identity, right? That's who I was. I was a cavalry officer, you know, who had been to, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, yada, yada. And once I was out of that, like, I didn't know who I was anymore, right? So, to do what you love, to do what you believe in as a living, I think is a great gift, right? I mean, I come to work, you know, in a t-shirt and jeans. I meet with other vets. I meet with CEOs of billion-dollar companies who are thinking about donating. I mean, it's different every day. I'm still fired up and passionate about it. I'm doing it 2.5 years, right? The day I quit being passionate and fired up is the day I have to walk away. But, you know, give nonprofit a shot. Depending on which one you're at, you can make a pretty good living, to be honest. And at least other things too. Like the lessons I'm learning here and helping to build a company, I can take that to either start my own company or work at a, you know, at a big firm somewhere. So I went from a naysayer to a beyond true believer that the things you learn, the network you build, you know, and just having that feeling of I'm doing something worthwhile is pretty incredible.
That's awesome. What about, I always like to ask, any resources that you would recommend? That could be books or podcasts or articles or just anything that's helped you in your civilian career you'd want to share with listeners.
All kinds. I think one of the biggest ones, especially in the nonprofit kind of decision, was this is a nonprofit, but it's called 80,000 Hours. It started by this guy. I think he's an Oxford philosophy professor, a young guy, but I think he made a pledge to live off something small every year. But 80,000 hours, that's about the average of the hours you work in a lifetime. And so the whole thing is, you know, what should you do for a living, right? You know, and it's there's some surveys involved and great readings, but it's all about, you know, what will make you happy, right? And some of the studies, like, at a certain point, there's a certain number, and I can't remember what the average number is. I think it's a difference of maybe $50,000 that the more money you make, is it going to make you more happy, right? I mean, there's a certain point when you have your needs met and you have certain things that you want to have that are nice, but you have to start to think about what can this lead to? Do I find purpose in this? Is there meaning, right? So that's where some great books, good podcasts. There's actually a survey, like, what do you want? What do you think is important? What interests you? And it kind of helps you figure out what you want to be when you grow up, right? I mean, I'm 35, turning 36. I'm on my third kind of industry career. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, right? So the other beauty of this job is it's flexible hours. So I'm at Emory right now getting an MBA courtesy of the GI Bill. You know, it's a $120,000 degree that is on the house because of the VA. So, you know, I still don't know what's next, but, 80,000 hours. I've been listening a lot to the NPR, How I Built This, right? Which is how you build companies. And I find it fascinating for people have an idea and build and take it from idea, just through hard work and ingenuity and some luck into something amazing. I mean, in a lot of ways, I feel like that's what Team Red, White, and Blue is, right? It was an idea and through hard work and luck and it's growing and growing to something pretty special. I'm a Tim Ferriss guy. I haven't listened to him for a while, but books, man. I own probably 500 books that are stacked in my studio loft. I could talk for hours about those. I think one of my favorites might be Colin Powell, It Worked For Me, right? It's just a lot of books tend to be like, hey, look at me, how cool I am. This is what I did. Kind of almost like humble bragging. I found that one to be like, hey, I've done this stuff. These are like the ways I live my life. And even the tactical things like how I write my speeches and thank you notes. I mean, it was a cool window into someone who's been very successful and a great army leader and a great leader in other ways. Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree on the NPR How I Built This. That's my favorite podcast. I think it's so great for entrepreneurs or just anyone wanting to learn or be inspired. And I'll definitely check out 80,000 Hours and also haven't listened to Tim Ferriss in a while, but he has a great podcast. So for listeners at beyondtheuniform.io, I'll put links to all of these so you can check them out as well. Last question I always like to ask is just kind of make it more open-ended. And, you know, you've provided a lot of great advice about Team Red, White, and Blue and your own career path, but just wanted to open it up and just give you room to share anything else and just final words of wisdom.
Final words of wisdom. You know, I don't have anything figured out, right? I've been very lucky in kind of getting to this job that I love. But, you know, I've got, you know, obviously I've got friends in the military still, and we all kind of talk and compare notes. And I've got a twin brother, right, who's an Army guy who got out. And through mentorship, you know, like he's a smart kid, but he's not a genius. He got to go to Harvard and Dartmouth just through hard work and mentorship. He's a big consultant now because he's got to pay the bills. But, you know, I look what he does, and sometimes I see the paycheck, and I get jealous. But he's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you have the greatest job in the world. You're going to help people. You have a blast. You travel nonstop. Like, you make your own schedule. Like, you win, right? And so just enjoy where you are, right? I'm sometimes I listen to my own advice, but I'm also like, what's the next step? How can I go somewhere else? What's the you know, progress and development, higher and higher and more? Like, let's take a deep breath. Look around, you know? This is life. Enjoy where you're at, you know? And I think you'll find that you've got a pretty good spot you're in.
Well, fantastic advice, man. I think that's something I'm struggling to do and trying to make a better effort to do. Is I'm such a destination guy, always looking at that endpoint, always thinking what's next, and just taking that deep breath and just really enjoying where I'm at and what I'm doing. And I think that's advice that would benefit anyone in any job and any career. And also just recognizing that you know, the fulfillment that you have and the impact that you're having in your career, it is rare. There's not a lot of people I talk to whose job is directly making the world a better place and who is that passionate about what they do. And so I think it's a great example for listeners to see someone who has found something that's enjoyable and is making the world a better place.
Well, appreciate that, brother. And I'll tell you, like, you don't have to work it to get into it, right? I mean, our volunteer leaders, and some give 5 hours a week, some are like, go nuts and give, you know, up to 20 hours a week, but they really run the organization. And just to be able to see them, you know, go from one spot and develop into something else, and, you know, even get promotions at jobs, it's just, I guess that's the real world, right? You're seeing folks kind of progress and develop, and you know, folks that run this thing for no money. I mean, how many organizations that are 130,000 people run off volunteers? I mean, that's what keeps me motivated and fired up, right? So it's pretty awesome just to be part of this thing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Garrett. For listeners, you can find out more at teamredwhiteandblue.com or teamrwb.com. You'll find references in the show notes for everything we've discussed. And thanks for your time and advice.
Surface.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Check out Team Red, White, and Blue at teamrwb.com. Check out our show notes at beyondtheuniform.io. Check out that audible.com free trial. The proceeds go to help offset the cost of this show. And I will be back next week with more stories from veterans about their civilian career.